Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Gritfish.
Good evening, everybody. It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and as always, you're listening to Radio RF. I'm Dreadfish, reporting to you from on-site at Dreadfish's band practice space, here with my co-host, ETOJ.
Hey, guys. So why don't you tell us, why are you reporting from on-site today?
Well, I got a set of drums, finally. I'm quite excited, and so I didn't want to go home, do the show, and then come back to practice some more. So I figured I would just do a show here and then practice some more. So thankfully, we had a really crappy drum set, and there was an accident this past weekend that killed the crappy snare stand. And so anyway, I was going to buy a drum set when I was done with this summer internship, because I get a bulk payment at the end. And my stepdad was wonderful and kind enough to offer to loan me the money to buy the sets, and I'll pay back when I get that money and also doing work. So now I have a nice the drum reflex set in black satin. It's awesome. I just got to tune it, but it'll sound so much better whenever I buy some nice heads instead of the stock heads, tune them right. But it's a great set, so I'm happy about that.
Now, do you use a particular brand?
For heads
or style? Well, I don't know what would the sets come in.
Yeah, well, the brand, the drum, they make pretty decent drums. This is an intermediate kind of level kit, so, you know, it's not the best, and the best are over $1,000, you know, really expensive. This was moderately priced. It was actually on sale because it had been there a while, had a few blemishes, and I don't care, you know, because it'll still play just fine. And so, you know, it's a fine brand, you know. They make really good ones and really bad ones, too, and this one's a pretty good one. It's in the middle, you know, intermediate quality. And so, yeah.
All right, well, I know this has nothing to do with music, but I saw something interesting on the internet today, and apparently this college baseball player gets hit with a ball and then catches it. And I'm about to, what's really interesting about this article, though, or this story, is not so much the, well, I mean, yeah, it's kind of cool. He gets hit with the ball and catches it. Like, you don't really see that every day. But what really got my interest up was the commentary on the video, and I'm about to play that for you real quick. As soon as his ad stops playing, actually, which is why there's a whole pause, and I'm still ranting. And here we go.
I mean, that's straight out of 1983. Ooh. You catch it? Yeah! Woo! Ha-ha!
Yeah! Woo-hoo! Aha!
That sounds cool. I haven't seen it. I should check it out.
Yeah, I posted the link on tonight's episode, so you can check this out. I did see something a little less exciting or a lot less fun in the news today, and there is the shooting in Waco with the biker gangs. I believe something like 9 dead, 17 injured, and almost 200 people arrested.
So oh, yes, I remember now. I was confused about the shooting. That one was a biker fight. Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yeah, that just happened, like, last night or this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently what's happening is that the authorities knew they were there because the cops were, like, surrounded the building. They were just waiting for something bad to happen because I guess there was, like, an or a gang meeting between the gangs to talk about, like, turf and recruiting and stuff. They tried to prevent it, but luckily no civilians were hurt or even police officers. It was only biker gang members who got hurt. And it's not even clear whether or not rival bank or bikers shot them or the police shot them at this point.
Mm-mm. From what I heard, I think it was both of them fighting both gangs. If I remember correctly, what I heard on NPR was that, you know, it started out just fist fighting and that sort of thing and then turned into guns. But I'm not sure. I didn't hear if any police shot anybody. I'm under the impression it was all the bikers shooting each other.
Well, from what I've read, it sounds like the police did shoot at them, and they weren't really sure, you know, who ended up shooting who, though. And they didn't really seem particularly worried about it, though.
I was curious if, you know, what the biker gangs were. I guess they weren't well-known enough to have their names broadcasted, but I was kind of curious.
I didn't look enough to look into the biker gangs. It says there were several, though. So, who knows?
Oh, yeah, so this weekend, speaking of recent events, I went to an air show. I think I may have been to an air show before. I had been to one when I was a little kid, so I've been told. I don't remember it. It was pretty fun. We saw the Thunderbirds, you know, the Air Force version of the Blue Angels, basically. And they fly the F-16 Falcon, I think. And so that was pretty fun. It was great whenever they were going supersonic. You know, you'd see it coming through and not even hear it. And then as it goes past you, suddenly you'd hear the thundering sound rolling past where they just were. That was really cool to see them moving fast through the sky, completely silent for a moment there.
Wow.
But that was fun. I saw an old friend I hadn't seen in a while. She lives in the area where that air show was. And when I told her that we were going down there, I went with my family. You know, she made arrangements to come too. So that was nice. I hadn't seen her in a few years. And, you know, there's some other cool planes out on the tarmac there. And saw a little dog show, you know, showing the military dogs. The Air Force people were pretty nice.
That's cool. It sounds like a lot of fun. And it's always nice to see old friends.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good weekend. We went to see family the day before for partly Mother's Day and then also my grandmother's birthday. We went over to see them, and then after that we drove to where the air show was going to be, spent the night, and then saw that. So overall, it was a pretty good weekend.
Speaking of getting out and seeing people, you find out if you can make it to my baby shower yet?
I'm not sure. I really want to make it, so I'm going to have to find out for sure. But I just know that it'll cost a lot to drive up there. Because of the distance.
Right. If
I don't
you
mind
want
distance.
To guilt Dredd into driving up into my baby shower, you can guilt trip him live on the air at 646-200-4733. Again, that's 646-200-4733. Yes, that's right. On Radio R, we do support peer pressure.
Yeah, I dare you. Call in and try to guilt me.
I'm pressuring you into pressuring him. Do it.
Peer pressure 2.0. So, what is our topic for tonight?
Right. Well, today's topic is Germanic paganism. Now, I've decided to note this as a historic religions profile, and I wanted to preface tonight's episode by saying that I'm completely aware that there is a revivalist movement, you know, recreationist, and in some ways, you know, a variety of Germanic paganism is very alive and well today. The reason why we made tonight's episode a historic religions profile is because that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about contemporary German paganism, but we're talking about historic Germanic paganism. And while we might broach a little bit of the other topic, I think we would talk more about contemporary paganism in a contemporary paganism episode. There was some argument about, you know, which tribes we're going to talk about and which Germanic paganism we're going to talk about. So we decided to kind of do it all because Dredd and I and our guest speaker each had a different particular area of interest that we wanted to look into. So we decided to kind of do it all very generically. Did you want to bring our guest on the show? Oh, you can. I can do it. All right. So let me introduce our guest.
Yes.
Hello.
You want to introduce him?
Oh, you were saying me. Sorry. I'm on speakerphone. Yes, so this is our guest from the forums, Nietzsche, or Nietzsche. I've always said Nietzsche. And he knows about these Germanic religions and had volunteered to talk about it, and we accepted. So, welcome to the show, Nietzsche, and we're happy to have you here.
Thank you.
I guess you should first define what is Germanic paganism, or what do we mean by Germanic paganism? Because it seems to be a very big question.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Germanic paganism roughly is the northern offshoot of Indo-European paganism, stuff that splits into Hellenistic, Roman, Etruscan, Iberian, Celt and stuff. And because of that, it shares a whole lot with Hinduism and all the other pagan faiths that you find from that region. But what makes it different, at least, is that almost all of the Germanic pagan gods or deities are gods of war.
Really?
Does that make any sense?
Yes. So why is that exactly?
Because their culture was based around a warrior culture rather than architectural, artistic, like what you find in Greece.
Well, you see a lot of that in the surrounding tribes as well.
Do you want? You would find it that.
What was that?
Oh, I couldn't hear what you said.
Oh, I see. You happen to see a lot of focus on warfare in a lot of the surrounding tribes as well.
Yes,
so maybe not quite the reference to all the war gods.
Yes. However, when the Hellens and all the other pagans, well, all the other European civilizations settled down, they sort of started dropping their war gods. They would only have one or two. Whereas Germanic paganism, there are six off the top of my head.
And about when did that happen?
About the time Greece started to come up. So you're looking at, I'm not sure about the timeline for Greece, but I know that in Germanic paganism, you start seeing you start seeing the gods specialize into different types of war.
Okay.
I'm not sure where to go from here.
Okay, well, I guess the issue is Germanic paganism. There's obviously several tribes that are considered, Germanic tribes who are functioning distinct versions of paganism. So, I mean, you kind of briefly went over it before, but like, particularly which tribes in particular we're talking about, and which pantheons of gods are the major ones we're talking about when we're talking about Germanic paganism.
Well, you've got the West Germanic culture group, which that would be the people who became Dutch, Anglo-Saxons, and such. You've got North Germanic, Scandinavia, and then you've got Central Germanic, that's what we call Germany now, and you have the extinct East Germanic, people like the Lombards, the Goths, Visigoths, and such. The East Germanic tribes didn't get to develop their paganism quite as much as the Northern and Western, and you can see this in how they, one of the gods, Tyr, or Tuir, rather, is traditionally the king of the gods, the German equivalent of Zeus. He was supplanted by Odin, in both the Anglo-Saxon and the North Germans. Because even though Tyr was a god of personal combat, one-on-one battles between nobles or warriors, whereas Odin was just the general god of war and of death, which is one of the reasons that's one of the big splinter points between German, and Hellenistic paganism. With the Hellens, Zeus remained the highest god, and Hades was the god of the dead. Whereas in Germanic paganism, they made the god of the dead the highest. They gave him all the authority.
And now, do you see a distinct cultural clash derived out of that? Is that, what does that show you necessarily about the Germanic people?
Well, the ones to the south and to the west, mostly to the south, were more easily, they were closer to the Hellens and eventually to the Christians, who, you know, converted and assimilated them.
Yeah.
Now, probably a whole lot more cross-pollination.
Well, there's a lot of cross-pollination in that region. It's hard to really even think about Germanic tribes without also thinking about the Franks and the Celts. And, I mean, as they even see, they list the Franks as a Germanic tribe, so.
They were, originally. Then they became Latinized.
Now, in the, speaking of the Celts and that sort of thing, in the more Anglo-Saxon incarnation of these deities, I know Odin is called Woden or Wotan. That's how we get Wednesday being Woden's Day. What are some of the other parallels with the deities like Thor and the ones we're really familiar with in the Norse type of paganism? What are their parallels in the more Anglo-Saxon incarnations?
The Anglo-Saxon pagan tradition, rather, is almost identical to the Norse, and except for one, there's one thing that they seem to be missing, and that is the figure of Loki. There is no Loki equivalent anywhere except in the Norse traditions, but they revere Odin or Woden with a W as the highest god, Thor is his son, etc. They're extremely similar except for that. You could sort of look at Anglo-Saxon paganism as the midpoint in Germanic paganism, where you would, you know, the point, because they had already replaced Tyr with Woden, but they hadn't yet adopted their a trickster figure.
Okay.
Or discovered, or found, or created.
So they
there's
have. Go ahead.
There's also in Anglo-Saxon paganism, there is no Surtr figure, fire giant, with the big fiery sword. That's exclusive to Norse paganism.
Hmm. So with some of these parallels, you know, they're generally the same deity with a similar name, do they have the same features? Do they
largely
tend to represent
they are anything? Identical. Largely okay. They are identical. It just depends.
So for the most part,
Woden,
it's a link different than naming?
It's mostly just the spelling that changed as the language is developed. But you can look at Woden or Wodenaz. Yeah, that's the pre-Germanic reconstruction spelling. There's not that much difference. It would be better to look at it sort of like as a difference between, I believe it's Zeus and Jupiter. Is the Roman equivalent of Zeus? They're not that different. They mostly just have different names.
Okay, that's a good parallel. Yeah.
I think it's Jupiter that's the Zeus equivalent.
Yes, I think it is. That's the biggest planet.
Now, I had a question about like the particular practices. What did it mean as just an individual to follow the Germanic paganism ways? Like, what were your view of afterlife? How did you view your role in life and within your tribe? How did those impact from the religious viewpoint?
It depends on what class you are born into.
Wait, what was that?
It depends on which class you were born into.
Okay, so how many classes did they have? They had three, right? They had
Roughly three, sometimes four, but largely just three. You have the noble class, which that's where you found the leaders, the strongest warriors and the shamans. And then you had the, I guess what you'd call the peasantry. Everyone from, you know, the middle class, I guess you could almost call it. And then you have the third, the thralls, which not quite slave labor, but close.
Hmm. So you're basically born into a class that worshipped a certain god.
You were born into a class that influenced which gods you would find most useful.
Ah, okay. Like
for
in
instance,
the... go ahead.
No, go ahead. Okay. The nobles, for instance, mostly venerated Odin, the god of death and glory in battle. Or Tyr, because he was the one you would swear to. You'd make an oath based on Tyr, raise your right hand and such. If you're peasantry, you tended to worship Thor, because he was the god of... he was a protector of mankind, and he was a fertility god, which is something that tends to get lost, especially here recently. An interesting anecdote, I think, is everyone knows about Mjolnir, Thor's hammer.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the things that he does with it is that if he rubs it, the shaft of the hammer, it grows. So you can, I'll let you deal with that.
I had read that, yes. now, speaking of classes, and we talked about Odin, I know, you know, he has a very diverse range of attributes and associations.
Mm-hmm.
I know that apparently not only was he sort of the god that the nobles and kings kind of devoted themselves to, but also outsiders, I think. People like shamans or, I think, thieves or artists or something like that as well?
Yes, the god of poetry, wisdom, and death.
Yeah, and with his war association, it's my impression that it's not so much the act of war so much as it's that feeling, that kind of cure that's associated with any of those things, actually.
Yeah, it's the... he was the one who, you know, grant the berserk, or the bear shirt, which, you know, that's where we get the stories of Vikings who could, you know, be hit hundreds of times with a sword or with an arrow, continue going. He was, I guess you could actually say, he was almost the god of passion in that regard.
Yeah,
it's just
passion.
That instead of, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm gonna play a quick
just
a little break. It should be playing.
Eternity outside.
again, that track was submitted to us by Dionysius, and I don't have the list open, so I don't know what track it's called right now, but it's listed as track two. I'll get you the song name next episode. Again, that's Dionysius, though, and he's played a lot of music on Radio RF, and you can, too, if you just submit your files to me. Now, Orbit called in, and she had a question for our guest tonight. Hello, Orbit.
Hey, Eddie. Hey, Dredd. Hey, Nietzsche.
Hey.
Hello.
I was very intrigued by something you said at the beginning of the interview, and I wanted to ask you if you could elaborate on it. You were talking about how Germanic paganism came in through Indo-European influence, and there was a similarity to Hinduism. What is the similarity?
Well, the best one I can think of is comparing Odin to who's the avatar of destruction? Is it Shiva?
Shiva, yes.
Yeah, the best example is Odin and Shiva. They both carry a decimating sphere, and they both are associated with multiple appendages, except in Odin's case, his eight limbs are from his horse, Sleipnir.
Mm.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's very interesting.
Thank you for calling in, Orbit.
Thanks.
And if anyone else has questions, you can call us at 646-200-4733. Now, we did want to ask you about various holidays that are found within the Germanic tribes and Germanic paganism. And if you could maybe note if different tribes celebrated different holidays or if they all kind of celebrated the same holidays.
They all more or less celebrated the same holidays, but that's because they're based around the harvest time and such. It's less active collaboration and more just this is when the food comes in.
Makes sense.
For instance, we celebrate Christmas or Yule, and then in the case of Yule, it's because if I'm not mistaken, that's during the coldest and darkest part of winter.
Now, is it true that there's possible association between our version of St. Nicholas and Odin being a wanderer, cloak, long beard, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's more than just association. It's almost a blatant copy, really, at least how we think of St. Nicholas. Obviously, we're not talking about the Greek actual St. Nicholas. We're talking about Santa Claus,
mm-hmm.
who, he wears red, and he has a sleigh pulled by reindeer. Well, Odin has a sleigh, and it's also pulled by reindeer on what's called the White. And you can find that in Celt, Gaul, and Finnish paganisms as well.
Mm. Now,
in
fact, go ahead.
Go on. Well, in most of Europe, Santa Claus lives in Finland, which is where people, that's sort of a carryover from a much older time, where people would consider the furthest place that they knew of to be where their gods lived. In a lot of cases, that was Finland.
Well, this is about the darkest corner of Europe.
Basically, yes.
So are there any other holidays associated or any by name Easter. That we might know of?
Easter.
Oh, okay.
It's based around a fertility goddess, one that's not very well documented, but we do have some. That's where we get the bunnies and the rabbits.
Hmm. Okay. Before we went on to the next topic, I was actually curious one more thing about Odin. I'm a big fan of Odin personally. I've done a lot of reading. One of the interesting things, a friend of mine who's really into Germanic history stuff, he had mentioned in earlier, you know, very early sources, Odin was attributed, or attributed to Odin, was the ability to change genders or sexes.
Yes, yes. Yes, Odin's a cross-dresser.
Okay. Is that tied to his practice of Seor, I think is how it's pronounced? Seder, okay. Is that tied to that?
It's more, it's potentially, although I've always seen it as more just the fact that Odin's a shapeshifter. That's something that he's always been. He can take on any form he likes.
Oh, okay.
As long as he's missing an eye. So.
Yes. Oh, that's really cool. Nice.
Okay,
so
we mentioned you wanted to talk about Loki.
Yes. Loki is unique to the Norse variant of Germanic paganism. And you don't find anything quite like him anywhere else in European paganism. However, if you cross the ocean and you get to the Americas, you find plenty of trickster gods. And we know that the Norse had contact with the Native Americans. And I think he might be a importation. You know, they imported him more or less from America.
Julie Jim Coyote, all right.
Yeah. And the thing about Loki as well is he's almost identical to how the Odin that you see in the early forms of the Germanic faith is depicted. Because Odin used to be still technically is, but much more common way back when. He was seen as a trickster god as well.
Hmm.
And there's reason to believe that Loki was sort of split off from Odin in that way.
Do you know when that happened and what may have caused that?
Well, there was a massive influx of new traditions that came in about, I think, 400 or so. Excuse me. Where you start seeing more and more. You start seeing the Norse variant of the faith start to differentiate more and more from continental Europe.
Hmm. So it's a little bit more of a later addition to the general Germanic pantheon?
It seems to be that way.
Hmm.
For instance, there's also, again, I mentioned Surtur, the fire giant.
Hey, I have a question actually here about Freya.
Yeah.
So who is Freya?
If I'm not mistaken, you're talking about the leader of the Vanir, the second pantheon of gods. Freya or Freyja? Are you talking about Freya or Freyja? With a J.
Freya. Freya.
With no J.
With no K.
Okay.
No J. Okay.
Yeah, that's the... Freyja is the... That's the wife of Odin. She's a member of the Vanir. She has a carriage that's pulled by cats.
By cats?
Yes.
What kind of cats?
Dog cat.
Norwegian. There's actually...
They're the Skog Katten, right?
Yeah, the Norwegian forest cat, which is a really hearty breed of cat that actually could do that type of labor.
I think they're
very
similar.
They would, the handmade animals.
Yeah, as far as an American equivalent, I think they're very similar in appearance and everything to Maine Coon cats, really big, bushy.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the Maine Coon is actually just a branch off of the Norwegian forest cat.
Could be. We have a Maine Coon cat. He's very large, has a hell of a personality, too.
I have not seen that type of cat.
Oh, they're very cool. He's
mm-hmm.
He could stretch out to be more than 2 feet long.
Nice. You have to put some pictures on it for me.
Yeah, and that's not including his tail, too.
We have another question.
All right. So go on. What is the trinity of Othin, Vili, V, and the slaughter of the sleeple Ymir?
I have no idea. I have no idea what any of that is. What is that?
The murder of Ymir is like some old tale.
That's the Norse origin story, how things came to be.
Origin story.
Odin, Vili, and Ve. Basically, it's Ymir was the primordial giant that Odin, Vili, and Ve, Odin's brothers, slew, and turned into the planet. Actually, the clouds are made of his brains, the oceans are made of his blood, etc. And Vili and Ve sort of disappear after that for some reason.
So the creation account is essentially about killing someone?
Basically, yes, in crafting a world out of its corpse.
Okay, and who is Ymir with the giant, you said?
The father of all giants, yes.
Oh, yeah, Ymir is the father of all giants. Okay.
Yeah. Well, father of all the giants.
Of all the giants.
Yes.
Cool.
Well, actually, to go slightly off topic, speaking of father of all the giants and Odin, we know Odin is called the All Father, and he is actually father of most of the Aesir. Is there more symbolism in that title of being the All Father?
There are some versions of the creation myth of where Odin crafted the first humans out of, I think it's tree bark. But as far as the All Father thing, it's more of a father in the sense of someone who is responsible for something, less than actually being the physical father of everything.
Okay.
Like, you know, for instance, Zeus is the physical father of almost all of the Greek gods. Odin, not so much.
Is it Thor is the first thing down the mountain?
I did not hear any of that.
I'm not sure if he's asking a question or not.
Sorry,
Okay.
I have another. My friend has another question. Who is Niorf? Nyorf or Nyorft?
Th.
North. It looks like North. Niorf.
Right.
So
wait.
Who is Niorf?
Spell it.
I think he said Nyorft. I'm not familiar with that either, actually.
No, I've never.
But.
I'm not sure what that is. I've never heard of that before.
Okay.
Are you talking about the Norwegian skiing god?
I'm not sure. Are you there?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's there, actually. Well, tell us about the Norwegian ski god.
No, that can't be it. It's Uller. That's the ski god.
So, who is that?
He's... He's not very well documented. We've only got a handful of stuff with him, but he's always wearing skis and a bow. He seems to be like sort of a minor deity, something that people who lived on mountains would pray to. Because skiing has been around for a surprisingly long amount of time.
Yeah. So actually, I was curious. Oh, are you back, Itty?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem.
I was going to ask a question. I mean, about the afterlife. What did the Germanic pagans believe about the afterlife?
You get into the afterlife if you get one at all. That is based on deeds. Everyone's aware of Valhalla. But there's three or four other places that you can go. There's Folkvanger, which is owned by Freyja. Half the slain go to her hall rather than Valhalla. Those who die on the sea go to what's his name? He's not even really a god, he's a giant. And then there's Hel, H-E-L, which is where most everyone else goes. So it's okay. It's not that different from Hades. It's just sort of a place of gloom.
Okay.
Hmm. So not really torturous, but just not great.
No. There's only one sort of torturous spot.
Okay. So if you don't perform certain deeds, then you just kind of go to the generic afterlife. But if you're you live a life of note, I guess, then you have a chance of going with Freyja or Odin.
Right.
So you're saying half the slain go with Freyja. So
yes, she gets
do you pretty much have to die in battle to get to a different afterlife?
Not necessarily. It's just as long as you don't die what they call the straw death. A straw death is, it's probably better translated as a death by cowardice. So,
yeah.
For instance, someone who dies trying to get someone out of a collapsing building, for instance, probably goes to Valhalla.
Okay.
It's just
so generally,
long as you don't give up.
So generally, it's all. Generally, I guess I would say most of Norse society is associated with courage and honor. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Could you go into explaining Hel a little bit more? I guess because most people have the idea of our Judeo-Christian, or mostly just Christian Hel. Being, eternal torture, fire, and all that. But this is different.
Yeah, it's just a place of, it's described almost identical to Hades. A place of gloom and shadows where, the dead are just sort of kept. No one is really suffering, but there's no great jubilation either. Only thing of note about Hel is that in the Norse that's myth, they're going to be the people who are in Hel are going to be press ganged into a sort of army.
For what purpose?
Final battle, Ragnarok.
Okay. Could you go into Ragnarok? I know with some of the mythology,
okay.
I know that Odin, of course, is going to die at Ragnarok, and he can't stop
Everyone
it.
Everyone does.
Of course, he sits. Okay. So what's the nature of Ragnarok?
It's basically the... it's less... It's not really a judgment. What?
I think you can go ahead now.
I can?
I think so, yeah.
Ragnarok is best described as... it's best described as how it actually translates. It's the final battle. It's where all the gods get up on one side and all who oppose the gods get up on the other. And they fight until the end, and both sides lose. You don't win, you just put it off.
Huh. What exactly is the purpose of it? Why does it occur?
The way that the Norse looked at it, the Yggdrasil, the world tree, a tree over time, if it's not pruned or something doesn't get rid of the excess, it can start to kill it. Ragnarok is a way that the world sort of prunes itself. It gets rid of the excess and allows something new to come in.
So would it be, I guess, the world be kind of considered cyclic after Ragnarok?
Yes, it's extremely cyclic, yes. It is something that happens repeatedly.
So do the same Aesir and other gods come back after Ragnarok, or are there completely new gods?
It's never really explained. There's reason to believe that Odin rises from the dead, but it's not. There's not a whole lot about the after in regards to Ragnarok.
Okay. Another thing that reminded me of was the Wild Hunt. Is that any way related to Ragnarok?
No. It's just something that Odin enjoys doing. It's just, okay. It literally is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's Odin, and I thought it had something to do with ghosts or spirits as well, going on a big wild hunt, something like that?
That's, the ghosts and the spirits are the people who go with him, sort of like a hunting party.
Okay, and so it's something that happens regularly or multiple times?
Yeah. Yes, it's okay. Something that happens repeatedly. It's not an indicator event or anything.
Okay. Did you have another question, Itty?
Yeah, I would just say, what would be the overall intent of religion from a Germanic pagan's point of view? Like, what are they looking for? You know, in their practice, is it about worship? It doesn't sound like it's really about the afterlife, which still it could be, depending on how you want to worship, I suppose. What's the ultimate goal and practice of the practices?
Honestly, it seems mostly an exercise to spite fate. Because that's one of the recurring themes, is that you can't necessarily put something off, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
Seems related to kind of coping with the harsh existence in that part of the world, with the harsh nature, difficulty getting by?
Yes.
Okay. I guess that makes sense with the courage and honor, trying to live a strong life despite everything.
Right.
And not giving in like a coward, I guess you could say.
Basically.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, go ahead.
That's the reason that one of the epitaphs for the Einherjar are those who died but never fell. And they died, but they didn't surrender.
I like that. I could find myself sort of following some of the Norse religion, not as much believing in the literal existence, which apparently in some modern day, like Asatru, they don't necessarily ascribe literal existence to gods, but the lifestyle thing I appreciate.
The Norse themselves didn't seem to believe in the literal existence of gods either.
Yeah, really? Yeah, it's my impression that it's like with the poetic Edda and the prose Edda, those were written during the time of Christianization, and actually by a Christian, I believe, trying to document it, I think. So it's our more literal interpretations come from the Christian point of view.
Right. Yes. That's also where we get the notion that Baldur rises after Ragnarok.
Okay. Yeah. One of the things I was reading, there's a good website, which we were able to link. I thought it was a good website. It's called Norse Mythology for Smart People. And back when I was reading about Odin a lot, they spoke, they wrote about that. And there were things about the other Aesir as well. But what I liked is, to sum it up at the end, they described Odin as basically that will to power, kind of inherent in nature and all things, the will to overcome itself and get better and press on, that sort of thing.
Basically. That's actually a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you want to shorten it even more, it's just because you can.
Hmm.
Like the Mountaineers thing, where because it's there.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of good things we can take from this, even if we don't want to believe it, so to speak, or anything like that. I think there are a lot of values and demeanors that are of value to anybody's life associated with this. So did you have any final questions, Iti, before we close off the show?
I almost have too many, but not any that are reined in. So I'd just like to kind of open-ended question. Is there anything in particular? Oh, we have a guest. Is there anything in particular you wanted to talk about? We do have another caller on hold, so I'm going to go see who this is real quick.
It just started raining here. I don't know if you guys can hear it. I apologize if you can. I'm kind of trapped in my car right now.
Where do you live, anyway?
Do you have our caller, Itty?
Okay. All right, guys. We have Matt in here, and he wanted to ask a question.
All right.
Yep.
Hello?
You're on.
Hi. I had a question. Is there any sort of pagan revivalism happening in Europe at the moment, and how extensive is the revival movement?
In Iceland, there certainly is. They're actually building, the government of Iceland itself is actually building a temple to Odin. The first one in a few thousand years.
Wow. Yes, I saw that. That's pretty cool, I think.
Anything in Germany or Sweden or anything like that? Western Europe?
You have to be really careful, especially in Germany, because a lot of times it's been co-opted by, you know, neo-Nazis and such. But there is genuine, I guess you'd say, pagan revival in some areas that's not tainted by association with, you know, that.
Okay. So have neo-Nazis adopted the pagans, religion as well to some extent?
They did adopt the symbolism, like the swastika and such.
I see. Oh, actually, that leads me to another question, if you don't mind. The swastika, it's prevalent in many cultures. It's in India, it's in Iran, before Islam, and before Zoroastrianism.
It's literally everywhere.
Yeah, what is the significance of the swastika?
Sun wheel, mostly, I think.
Sun wheel?
It seems to be, that's at least how you tend to find it most. It's a symbol of power and good luck.
Okay, so it's actually a good symbol.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you can even find it in ancient Israeli tombs.
Yeah, no, actually in India, it's everywhere, like in all the temples on the outside. So, and even in some Zoroastrian temples, it's on the outside. So I was just curious, why did Hitler adopt it as part of his party or whatever?
Because it was a good luck symbol. People recognized that for centuries. It was an already established sort of thing.
Oh, I see.
You can use symbols for power and good luck, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't know it was also in entrenched in German culture as well. That's interesting.
Oh, yes, it was. The Finnish still use it.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not familiar with the fact that it's in the Germanic culture.
Yeah.
It would be easier to list the places that you won't find a swastika.
I mean, you can't really show it here in North America. It's illegal, I think.
I don't know if it's illegal, but it's
completely associated
with
Nazism.
Frowned upon.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, I suppose that just about wraps up our show. Do you have any final comments, Nietzsche?
No, I'm good.
See you. Right.
This was fun, though.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I had a blast
being on the show. This is really cool stuff. It's nice to hear somebody knowledgeable talk about it.
I'd like to, in the future, maybe do more of like a one that focuses more on like the Celtic tribes. And again, there's a lot of interplay between the Celtic and the Germanic tribes. Matter of fact, you often see like the Celts or the Franks listed within the Germanic tribes. So it's a little bit very confusing. We'd also like to do contemporary pagan, talk about the revivalist movements, and some of the other forms of current worship we're now seeing. So I don't want to imply that any of these are extinct faiths, because they're not. They have lively worship, and we'll have to cover that in the future, too. We're doing Islam in two episodes with Muslim and Black. And let's see, next week I think we're doing a philosophy episode with Mecca.
Epicurean or Neo-Epicureanism, yes.
Yeah. And we'll work on a few other things. Do you have any closing remarks?
No, I'm good.
I think I'm good as well.
All right, then good night, good morning, and good afternoon.
And good now.